There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. The Big Question.
Dawn Metcalf, welcome to the show. I'm just going to introduce Dawn for anybody who isn't familiar with her. So she has written her latest book, which is Hard Talk. She's also the author of Managing the Matrix, and she's also the Managing Director of Performance Development Services. So you're a leadership advisor, you're a facilitator, you're a coach. What else am I missing?
I have the best job in the whole world.
Yeah, I missed that.
She is my inspiration, actually, because I spent all of yesterday reading her book and I thought it was fantastic.
Oh, I'm blushing.
So you can add that to your business card.
Thank you so much, Rachel.
So we are here to talk about Hard Talk. We've had a couple of text messages come in from the previous segment, though. And I know that poetry is something that we briefly want to talk about here now. Andrew says, love the Birmingham poem. Long legs of the M6 is such a good description. Evokes memories of my commute via the M6 and M5 to Wales. I'm glad you enjoyed the poem. Now, there's a poem that you'd like to read out that's relevant to Hard Talk, isn't there?
So I'm Irish, which means that I learned an awful lot of poetry in both English and Irish as a kid. I learned it by putting it onto a tape and then listening back to it. And so I really wanted to try and get a poem involved in this latest book. And there's a guy called Brian Bilston, which is not his real name, it's a nom de plume. And he wrote the poem about refugees, that if you read it one way, it seemed really anti-refugee, and if you read it the other way, it was very pro. And I heard him talking on the BBC, a Radio 4 programme, and I got in touch with him and asked him if he'd write a poem for Hard Talk, and he did, and it's in the front of the book. I think it may be one of the only business books in the world that actually has a poem in it, but I'd love to read it to you.
Please, we'd love to hear it.
Thank you. So it comes in three stanzas. The first stanza is, in which the poet writes a poem. Small talk is easy, whether you're discussing the weather or the TV, but what if there are other words that float in your head, which always remain unsaid? Words you always wanted to say, but could never find the optimum way. Conversations you end up sweeping under the carpet. You'd like to begin one, but you're unsure how to start it. If only you could utilise the correct tools, learn a new way, find a set of rules, to enable you to have difficult conversations without offence or obfuscation. Stanza 2, in which the poet learns some hard truths. Thanks for sharing this poem with me. I've been giving it some thought. There's much to like. The spelling's good. The font is clear. It's mercifully short. But I have some ideas to share which I think will help improve it. These idioms don't travel well, and the jargon jars. Remove it. Think about the pace and rhythm and how to make the poem scan. The ending could be stronger still. Thanks. I do hope you understand. Finally, stanza 3, in which the poet triumphs. It's easy to talk about this and that, the TV, the weather, the dog, the cat, but what of the words that are left unsaid, the things of which you should have talked, instead? The situation's forever broken, haunted by the ghosts of words unspoken, and the absence of a proper exchange. Little wonder that nothing much changes. But imagine if you could fight that fear, find the right words so that you can steer tricky conversations without balking. If you could do that, well, now you're talking.
Wow.
I like it.
And he's anonymous, we don't know who he is.
I know who he is.
Oh,
we don't know who
but it's a secret.
By the end of the show,
No.
We'll have to tighten the thumb screws.
I've been in so much trouble.
So Hard Talk, this is the big question today, for me anyway. What is Hard Talk? How do we have it? And why is it important to have?
I'm going to start at the end, if you like.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Why is it important to have? Because if we don't, nothing ever changes. Like the poet says, without a conversation, nothing ever changes. And so the Hard Talk, the book, is a handbook. It's there designed to help people to get better at doing this. And there's also a training program, so a modular, blended, customizable training program that exists to help individuals and teams at work predominantly to have these conversations. I've been living abroad, living outside of my home country for all of my adult life. I've lived in 9 different countries. And I'm fascinated by how people communicate, or more often don't communicate. And so for the last 3 years, that's what I've been focused on. It's been, how do we help everybody, no matter where they come from, no matter what situation they're in, to speak up in a way that allows them to hear, to be heard effectively, but also to listen sufficiently well so that other people feel comfortable bringing up their thoughts. The whole concept behind Hard Talk is that if we could hear and be heard, if we could know what was going on inside everybody else's head, and if they could know what was going on inside of ours, life would be easier. We'd make better decisions. We'd communicate more effectively. Those decisions would then be implemented more efficiently and more effectively. It sounds a little bit sort of soft and fuzzy, but it really, really isn't. And every time that I get some pushback on this, I talk about a guy called Ray Dalio. Do you know who he is?
No, I don't.
He is one of the 100 most wealthiest human beings on the planet. He's a bazillionaire. And he runs a hedge fund called Bridgewater. So the least soft and fuzzy guy you can talk about. And what he talks about all the time is radical transparency. So that ability for everybody to speak up, whether it's the assistant or the security guard or the receptionist or the vice president, everybody should be speaking up in a way that allows other people to improve their decisions and improves collaboration.
I mean, it seemed fairly obvious as I was reading, and that's how I knew I was really enjoying your book, was a lot of what I was reading, I had that aha moment where, yes, this is obvious. Why wasn't I thinking about this before? And one of the obvious points was that it was all about what you have to lose by not saying anything is often worse or just as bad as actually having the conversation in the first place. But we are biologically conditioned to resist having the conversation in the first place. I don't know about you, Rachel. I enjoyed the fact that you went into the biology of kind of what's going on in our brains and why we resist that conversation.
What was fascinating to me is it was relevant to me outside of a kind of business context, yeah, but within a family context, because I've got teenagers and my son at the moment is really struggling with anxiety to, yeah, the point that we're talking to people about it and trying to figure it out. And while I was reading, I was thinking some of these points are so relevant to why teenagers or anybody gets anxious. So there was this thing about labelling your emotions or, yeah, working out, as soon as you understand what you're feeling, it's much easier to calm down, work out whether it's a reasonable feeling, whether it's linked to an actual fact or to what you perceive as a fact and how you calm it down. So that was fascinating.
So I was very careful not to talk about personal stuff because I'm really bad at this in my personal life.
Well, that's the thing. I think you can be so wise when talking to other people and so useless yourself. I've been, yeah, giving my children this excellent advice that, as I see it, and then I'm like, do you know, I do all the things that they're doing and haven't dealt with it in 40 odd years.
Absolutely true. And I'm an ex-teacher, and I wish I'd known all of this stuff when I was teaching, because it would have made my life so much easier when teaching teenagers.
Yes, it is so relevant to teenagers because they're one of the worst at not actually saying what needs to be said, but then erupting in other areas because they haven't said the thing that they need to talk about.
We call this the spiral of doom.
Yes, what, mine are spiraling into doom.
So the idea of the spiral of doom is that we feel like we can't speak up. So we squash it down and we squash it down and we squash it down until finally we can't squash it down anymore. And it erupts.
And it goes... Yeah, like, right? I call it a well of resentment. I've got friends and I'm like, stop putting things in the well of resentment because at some point it will overflow.
Absolutely.
Deal
and at
with
that
it
moment,
in the moment,
it overflows. So we speak up, and we speak up in the worst way
and
possible.
Yes, that makes
and
no sense
therefore,
and irritates everybody.
Exactly. And the other person we're speaking to is bewildered by this, responds in a bad way. And guess what? We now have proof that speaking up was a bad idea in the first place.
Yes, so we think, well, I won't do that again.
So we won't do that again. So we go round and round and round and we go back into what we call in hard talk speechlessness, right? We become speechless again.
Yes.
Yeah, again and again and again. But to go back to labelling your emotions. So this is a really interesting technique. And it's, what they did was they put people into a functional MRI machine. And they induced particular emotions. So they showed them people looking angry or people looking sad. And then they said, okay, And when that happened, you can actually see the amygdala, the little bit at the back of the brain, light up, which is not necessarily a good thing because this is emotion. This is what...
It's your monkey lizard
it's
brain.
It's your
you
monkey
call it,
lizard
brain,
right? We call it Homer Simpson.
Yeah.
And you don't want Homer Simpson in charge. So how do you get Homer Simpson to calm down and get Dr. Spock back in charge?
I like it, yep.
So one of the things you can do is you can label that emotion. And the more specific you can be about the emotion that you're feeling, the more likely you are to get control over that emotion.
Yeah, what I loved, you put, and this is the problem I've been having with the kids, is you cannot tell yourself to calm down because you can't calm down.
You can't.
And then you're still in monkey lizard brain.
Monkey lizard brain.
Whereas once you start to think, okay, what is the emotion? How can I label it? Spock brain. It's magic.
It's the conceptual act theory. Now, to be honest, you have to be able to do that well, though, right? So
Yes. The
problem is that an awful lot of us, and I say this with a certain amount of trepidation, but particularly men, we're going to get into trouble for that.
That's right, there are
four
no men in there.
We'll keep
man outside in that room and we're fine. We're all ladies in the studio.
They go glad, mad, sad. Right, these are the three emotions that they can think of. So in Hard Talk, in the book and also in the training program, we actually provide you with a list of emotions to help you to get better
so you
at...
can poke a stick
exactly.
at that. Exactly. That's the one.
That's the one I mean, right? I'm not just happy or sad. I am angry. I am upset.
I like it. I should print that out and give it to some of my friends. If you're listening, friends, you'll be getting a list of emotions.
Right now, I've got a graphic designer working on making it prettier.
Excellent. When it is...
I will send it to you, I promise. I promise, unicorn girl.
Thank you.
What emotion are you feeling now?
I'm feeling pleasure. I'm glad. I'm being a man, I'm glad.
That's something that I want. We only have a couple of minutes, but we will come back and talk about this in more detail. But I did like the whole labelling the emotion. But I did find that once I'd kind of understood at the beginning of the book that there were... things that I kind of already knew in myself. You mentioned that there's like different levels of being aware of what you don't know and then actually acting on that.
Yeah.
So in my head, it all makes sense. But I was glad as I carried on reading that it was very practical. There were practical things that I could see myself doing. And you made it very clear that it wasn't going to happen overnight, but it was definitely something that you continue to work on.
We call it hard talk for a reason. It's hard. It's difficult. Yeah. If it were easy, then we'd all do it. You know, I've literally written the book on this and I messed it up twice this morning.
Humans.
Eh? Yeah. We're messy. So one of the things I say in basically every speech I've ever given is that this isn't rocket science. It's much harder than rocket science. Rocket science, you take chemical A and chemical B, you put them together and they reliably go bang. Humans, man, we're messy. We're really, really messy.
And that's why I didn't find it a soft and fuzzy book at all, was because it doesn't pretend that it is anything other than hard.
No,
and that's the beauty of it.
And we don't give listicles. We don't say, you know, if you do these three simple things, your life will be better. It's not simple. It's really, really, really difficult.
And that's what makes your book brilliant. Somebody has said, what is the name of the book you're talking about, please? Dawn?
It is The Hard Talk Handbook, and it is available online via noon.com and jamalon.com, and also at Kinokuniya and Virgin at the moment throughout the UAE. But we will get more outlets soon, I hope.
And it's brilliant.
It is brilliant. It's the definitive guide to having the difficult conversations that make a difference, and it really does make a difference today.
The big question.
Now, the subtitle to this is the definitive guide to having the difficult conversations that make a difference. And there was a bit that I really loved in here, Dawn, where you talk about...
Only one.
Oh, I loved all of it, but
million bits.
We don't have that long, and I have to pick a few choice moments from it. So when you talked about practical things that people can do to control their emotions and how, you know, labeling your emotions is very important and getting those under control before you have the hard talk, before you have these difficult conversations is really important. And I kind of know that already. But I got to about page 56 and it started talking about video games and something that you can actually do, because often people say meditation is what you should be doing. You know, you should be kind of calming yourself, focusing on that. And that's all very well and good beforehand. But when you're actually in the moment, you can't just kind of sit on the floor and say, hang on a minute while I meditate. You have to be able to control your emotions while everything is kind of flying at you. And there's a wonderful bit here where you describe Harvard University developing a game called Rage Control. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
So this was a video game that they created to help young people.
Yeah.
And it's called Regulate and Gain Emotional Control, so Rage Control. And the idea here was that you're playing a game, it's a shoot 'em up game, and you have a gun, and your gun has lots of bullets, obviously. But as your heart rate increases, which is a proxy for your emotions going out of control, your gun is disabled. And in order to get the gun back again, in order to get your bullets back so you can shoot the enemy spaceships, you have to bring your heart beat back down again. So the idea is that over time you learn what your body feels like when you're losing control and how to calm yourself so that you stay within that resting heartbeat. So it does the opposite of what you're being asked to do when asked to meditate or calm down, which is it allows you to stay in the situation, which, as you say, is exactly what you're trying to do in a hard talk situation. You're not being asked to remove yourself, because sadly you can't.
Not that meditation isn't also brilliant, but sometimes it just really
isn't.
There
are moments you can't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What did you find
There were a couple of things I found fascinating. There were a couple of kind of nuggets where you talked about this thing called the fundamental attribution bias.
Oh, yes.
And it says we tell ourselves that other people's bad behaviour is based on their personality and their motives, whereas our own behaviour is a result of external circumstances. Yes. And I love that. It's something I talk about on school visits, where none of us are the villain in our own lives. So we can always explain what we're doing, but then we judge other people so harshly.
Every
and I thought that was
time.
Fascinating.
Every single time. So I turn up late because the cat died. It was raining. My maid's not in.
Yeah, it's not
home.
My fault at all.
It's
I'm
not
perfect.
My fault. But you turn up late because you're disorganized and you lack lack discipline. And the problem is, it's not so much a problem insofar as we're doing it to other people. The problem is that we forget that other people are doing it to us all the time.
Yes, and so we don't understand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if we want to be perceived as caring, if we want to be perceived as somebody who is out there trying to find an answer rather than out there to punish other people, then we have to behave like that all the time, because other people are not giving us the benefit of the doubt. They're just not. They're assuming that our behaviour reflects what we really, really want.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. So it's so interesting. And like you said, Annabelle, it's all obvious, but it's obvious in a way that you haven't necessarily processed before. So
exactly.
It's really interesting.
And we've tried to make it really, really simple. So we've got four phases in hard talk. We've got work hard, speak soft, listen hard, and finish hard.
Finish was an important thing as well.
Super important, right? And it's an easy thing to do, but we forget to
Everyone
do it so
Everyone forgets,
often.
And you just assume everybody's understood everything, and
yep.
you leave, and then you come back to exactly the same problem next
exactly.
time.
Exactly, and particularly when we're working in a multicultural environment where words don't necessarily mean the same thing to different people.
The diversity thing was really interesting when you talked about diversity is not enough, you have to have inclusion. And I was speaking to a friend recently who's multilingual, not just bilingual, and she said that she'd done personality tests, and the personality tests gave her a different personality when she did it in English as when she did it in Arabic. And you were just thinking, if one person's personality changes due to a different sort of thinking, language, everything within one language set, what does that mean for the people you're working with in all these different cultures?
Absolutely fascinating. So one of the things that we talk about in Hard Talk is that there are three things that make Hard Talk hard, beyond our neurobiology, which is where the majority of the book focuses. But that's diversity, or difference as we call it, topic and purpose. But when we look at diversity, we say, look, diversity is hugely important. It is a good thing. It makes a difference to results, right?
Yes.
And that, you know, we're not soft and fuzzy. It's a business book. It is about results. It's about the bottom line. And we say, okay, well, how do you improve diversity? And one of the things you can do is to learn a language. Simply by putting your by understanding how other people see the world through that language can make a difference. And what we found is that kids who are bilingual or trilingual or more than monolingual are better at empathy. They're better at putting themselves
and it
into
could be
another.
Connected to this fact that you have different personas.
Absolutely.
It's such an interesting idea, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, I've learned a number of languages over the year. Tragically, not Arabic, because I came here when I was too old, and I live in Dubai, and we can get away with not learning it, which is really sad. But when I started learning Japanese, for example, when I was in my early 20s, my world exploded, because there were concepts in Japanese that just don't exist.
Yeah, yeah. And the people. So I learnt Hungarian because we lived there. And it means that some of my favourite people in the world are Hungarian. But I wonder if it's because I've entered their mindset with the language. I don't know. But it's really interesting stuff.
I had a similar experience with Spanish as well. So I was kind of, I didn't speak fluent Spanish when I went to Argentina, and then I kind of was thrown into a bilingual school, and the first week everybody was happy to speak to me in English, and then they got bored of it and
sure.
like, okay, you need to learn the way we speak
Speed
now.
Up now.
But there was so much more that became clear about sense of humour, I think, particularly.
Yes.
And people's personality shining through the language in a way that just wasn't clear when they were talking to me in English.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also what the book covers as well is diversity isn't just because of your language or your race or anything like that. Or it's also how you think. And it's got some brilliant bits. The reason I love the book, I love books where you can sort of assess yourself and see where you fit. So there was that bit about whether ideas are more important or process. And I was there with the graph deciding where I went in it. And it's great for that, because the book not only gives you all these tips, but it also kind of helps you understand yourself a little
bit. Well, if you like that, you should go to hardtalk.info where you
I'll be there later after checking out Armina's blog. So many things to do this afternoon.
So there's an audit, or rather a self-assessment you can do there as to how likely you are to be good or bad at hard talk. You can also download a free chapter of the book. Just saying.
Brilliant. Okay, so remind us of the URL.
www.hardtalk.info. hardtalk.info.
You're the first person who's actually said the www in a very long time.
I'm so old.
I use it as well. It's
but you're right, Rachel. There's a lot of working out that you can do. So, Dawn, you've got spaces in here for people to kind of write in the book as they go along. And there's definitely work to do. That's what you're saying here, is that you're giving people the information and the tools, but they do actually have to do some work before they go into their hard talk, which I thought was good. I think half the battle sometimes that I found when reading this was we kind of charge in with our emotions going haywire as well. We also don't necessarily prepare in the best way to have those difficult conversations.
Absolutely. And like, so we have those four phases that I spoke about, and the program itself has five different modules, and two of those modules are devoted to the very first phase, to work hard, because that's the stuff you have to get right. To be honest with you, the behaviours in listen hard and speak soft, they're not that complicated. Mm-hmm. If I showed you a video right now of somebody having a difficult conversation, you'd both be, in fact, every one of us would be capable of going, that's good, that's bad. That's not the difficult bit. The difficult bit is getting control of yourself. And we talk a lot in Hard Talk about bad behaviour. And by bad behaviour, we simply mean anything that works against the results that you want to get.
Yes.
It's not about letting other people get away with stuff. It's not about being soft and fuzzy. It's not about being nice. It's about getting the results that you want for yourself, for your team, for your family, for the organisation. And yeah, that involves a lot of hard work.
Also, with relevance to where we are, it was really interesting to hear that, because often you hear about the difficulties people have working across cultures, but the book sort of stresses that actually it's one of the things that can lead to great business success. And you've got the quote by Temple Grandin, who's one of my heroes.
Love
She's
her.
Like a famous engineer with autism, and she says that if you have the same minds working on a problem, you'll get nowhere. The true secret of great invention or anything like that is different minds thinking differently. And I thought
that
was
fascinating. And being able to speak up.
There's no point
having somebody with autism on the team or a lady on the team.
If they just sit there and
don't say anything, right?
Here's our person.
Exactly. Here's the token, right? Whereas what we need is for people to speak up.
Google's Project Aristotle.
Oh, I love Project Aristotle.
Yes.
I talk about Project Aristotle a lot. So Project Aristotle was about how do we make highly productive teams. And what they found was that what makes a highly productive team is not the cleverest people. It's not the most diverse team. It's the team where everybody speaks up.
Yeah, see, that was very interesting.
And then they said, well, how do you make that happen? How do you make everybody speak up? How do you create an environment where people are comfortable doing that? And the answer is trust. And it's not common trust. It's not the trust that, you know, I've got my iPhone here in front of me and
you
believe that Rachel's not going to nick it. It's the trust that if I say something stupid, if I ask the silly question, if I make a suggestion, that you're not going to destroy me for it. You're not going to punish me for it. You're not going to talk about me behind my back with Annabelle afterwards.
Yeah, that's
and
silly.
You think. Exactly. That's what you think.
See, this is what we're not talking about, Annabelle. So how do we create something like that? And it's not the trust exercises. That's not what creates that. It's not, you know, going away and building a raft together and then afterwards having a facilitator like me coming in and saying, so what do you think we learned?
I hated team building exercises.
Awful. They're the worst things in the world, right? It's everything that we do every single day, every single minute of every day, because we are being judged every single minute of every single day. And the more important you are, in inverted commas, the higher you are in the hierarchy, the more you're being judged, the more you are being looked at. So it becomes even more important to have that ability to manage your behaviour.
We are running out of time, so on that note, let's finish hard. And can you tell us what you meant earlier by finish hard? Because I think we know because we've read the book, but a couple of listeners might not quite understand what you mean by that.
So when you've had the conversation, when you've come up with the good result, when you've come up with the quote-unquote answer, you need to write that down. You need to write down who's going to do what, by when, where are they going to do it, how are they going to do it, and how are you going to follow up? As simple as that.
Actually, it's good advice for someone who is not a confrontational person in a work environment. I used to be in a lot of meetings and I've got quite a soft voice, and I often found that I didn't get heard unless the man next to me said what I just said and everyone said, what a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
But I would write the minutes often when I was junior in marketing and advertising agencies. And by writing the minutes, I could explain what should have happened in the meeting and just sort of express what needed to happen next. And I think that's quite a good tip for anyone who finds that they're not necessarily heard in meetings, whether they're quiet or young or for whatever reason.
They talk a lot about this, about how women are given the housework to do in offices.
Meetings,
and I've always said, well, that's fine, take the pen. The person with the pen
has a lot of control.
Power
of saying what happened.
Absolutely. And if you're the person, I work as a facilitator a lot of the time, and I'm the person with the pen, and it's amazing, because when somebody goes rabbiting off about something, you can say, yeah, no, we got that, I've already written it up here, next.
The we're going to have to leave it there. Just remind us, Dawn, where we can buy copies of your book and the title for anybody listening.
It's the Hard Talk Handbook. You can go to hardtalk.info, no www necessary, and you can get links to everywhere you can buy it from there. But it's noon.com and jamelin.com online and Kinokuniya and Virgin.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.